How's it going, everybody? Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. You've got the Rational Revolution. I am your host, Mark Becker, as always. Well, I suppose not as always. You know, this is more of a this year thing, but this has been such a fun time to do this. And yeah, I hope you caught last week's episode with Mandela Barnes. What a guy. What an amazing person. And he had such insight and really just brilliant things to say about everything from, you know, how they handled COVID, which is some of the stories that he told. I'm friends with Mandela. I never heard some of those stories. So if you want to listen to it, that episode and this one and all the other episodes we had are available online in podcast form, civicmedia.com, and check out The Rational Revolution. You're going to want to listen to this one because we've got an awesome guest for you all. We have Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway. Mayor, oh my God, what's going on?
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm really good. Yeah, life is good. You know, we're here up in Green Bay, and you're not in the state, are you? You're in the mecca of politics in America right now, right?
Yeah, I am in Chicago. I'm at the Democratic National Convention. I'm actually literally right now in the McCormick Center, which is where the daytime events are happening, and there's a lot going on here, let me tell you.
There is a lot going on. And there's a lot, yeah, my gosh, we're going to talk about that. You know, this is being recorded the day after Joe Biden's speech. Did you see that?
I did, yeah. I was actually right at the front of the Wisconsin delegation.
Oh, cool.
It was amazing. It was, I can't even tell you. It was a very emotional moment.
It was, yeah.
And the whole night was just incredible.
He was brilliant, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was a really great speech. And you know, I just like the crowd at the beginning was amazing, the energy. And you know, the speech was great. And then at the end, I mean, I'm not going to lie, when his family walked out,
yeah,
I had tears running down my cheeks.
Yeah.
It was really beautiful, very emotional moment.
It was cool because, you know, I was watching on TV, I was watching on my tablet from my bed, but you could see Kamala Harris came on stage and you could read her lips and she said, "You made me cry, Joe." And she gave him a hug and she said, "I love you so much." That got me in the feels, honestly. It was a really, and like, you know, I said a couple of weeks ago on the show that I think that what he did in terms of stepping aside was really like along the same lines as George Washington. You know, I think that history is going to be very, very kind to that moment.
Absolutely. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that was having, you know, some of the Hamilton songs run through their head when he made that announcement.
Oh my God. Exactly. So if you could, you know, the listeners might not, you know, really understand what happens at the convention, why we have that. Could you kind of explain what this is, what the process is, and kind of, you know, what is Wisconsin doing there?
Yeah, so the national conventions for the parties historically were the place where the nominee was picked. The nominee for president was picked and for vice president and you know, back in the day, it used to be a little bit more of a sort of insider thing. And now, because we have the presidential primaries in every state and territory, you really know who it's going to be sort of coming in because people have amassed their delegates. But it's still the chance for the party to officially nominate somebody for president and vice president. And obviously, we're here to nominate Vice President Harris and Governor Walz. And then to hear from them and to hear from other folks. And, you know, there's formal business, right? We have to, there's a platform committee, there's a rules committee, there's voting on those things and, you know, to sort of set the party platform. But then there's just a lot of other stuff going on. So there's trainings and there's caucus meetings and I can't even, like, there is so much happening in Chicago this week. It is wild. Yeah, but formally the point is to nominate the folks that are going to run for president and vice president.
Is there anything that's on like the platform committee, or is there any different focuses that are coming out of the convention that is different this year?
So I'm not on the platform committee, so I can't, I don't have insight into their sort of inner working, but I think there's been, you know, there's always a lot of conversation about what we're putting focus on. And certainly I think that the war in Gaza has been a focus this year. But, you know, historically, there's definitely been issues, you know, around the emphasis on climate and needing to, take that pretty seriously. That's an issue that's near and dear to my heart. And, you know, we talk about, like I just saw a woman walk by with a bag that says ranked choice voting. Like that's been a, a topic of conversation in the past. And so it's, I mean, this is, you know, this, the folks that are here are like, I mean, it is such a broad diversity of folks. I can't even tell you how beautiful it is, but these are the folks who are like hardcore into democratic politics and really care about platform positions and policy positions. And to the folks that get on the platform committee, you know, I think they really sort of thrash through the things that, like, what is most important to our party and how are we going to talk about it?
Yeah, I think it was Kevin McCarthy that said, you know, when they took a picture of like of the Republican side and it's all one color and one, but then the Democrats stand up and it looks like America. That's something that that really has stood out, because I watched the Republican convention. So I don't know if you know a background on who I am. So I used to be a Republican chairman, and I was involved in Republican politics heavily. And I was an elected official here in Brown County. And then the rise of Donald Trump happened, and I was a never Trumper. And then, so I left the party from that. And I married a woman who is a Black woman. And so seeing some of the inequities and, you know, it's just been, you know, I've had my great awakening, so to speak. And, you know,
so you really understand the difference between the parties and, you know, the, like what their convention looked like in Milwaukee versus what our convention looks like here in Chicago.
Intimately. Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And it's night and day. And so, you know, a lot of what we do here on this show is to try to, you know, bridge the gap between some people that are in the middle and kind of say, okay, well, if you're in the middle, you're really not, you know what I mean? because
the middle has shifted, right? The whole spectrum has shifted around us.
Yeah. And what was,
and it's a weird thing.
It was crazy. One of the takeaways that I had from, you know, the president's speech and some of the buzzwords that was happening on the Democratic side, like what the Democrats were talking about last night, what Joe Biden was talking about, if I closed my eyes, it was like something that the Republicans could only dream of. They talked about, Joe Biden talked about freedom, you know, and government overreach, government infringing on every part of our lives. I had this written down, you know, fighting for freedom, democracy, the soul of the country, how you don't have to have a college degree to be successful, build back manufacturing, blue collar jobs. This is what the Republican Party used to say that they stood for. And now it's like, you know, tinfoil hats, conspiracies, all of this stuff.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me. One of the things that I feel pretty deeply that's changed is that, you know, it used to be that folks, you know, on the more conservative side, Republican side, believed in local control and believed in letting local governments do what was right for their place. And that has, particularly in the state of Wisconsin, you know, that has really evaporated. And and what we see now in the state legislature in Wisconsin is just a constant effort to keep local government from doing things that would be good for their residents.
Well, you feel that, talk about that.
Control that policy. Yeah, it is really, I mean, I feel that very deeply because it constrains what I can do every day. And I mean, you know, we're not alone. Like there's other states that do this and other mayors that feel that same pressure. But Wisconsin is one of the worst in terms of the state preempting the power of local government to do what's needed.
Well, and you know, I remember, you know, in my time in the Republican Party. I mean, they would talk about, oh, these Dane County liberals, Dane County, Madison. And so, you know, you guys are like the bullseye for the Andre Jacques of the world who want to come in and, you know, demolish anything that they can. You know, if it has a Madison label on it, oh my God, you're a pariah.
Yeah. It's been really, I mean, that's really frustrating for me because, you know, I think that there are folks in the legislature that, you know, want to do the right thing for cities and that we could, you know, likely work together. But there's a few folks in key positions that just really make it impossible for anything that might benefit Madison to move forward. And I don't think, you know, frankly, I don't think it's even all the Republicans in the caucus, right? Because I've had good conversations with Republican representatives in Wisconsin, but it is a few folks that just really are I don't know, they're punishing, they're trying to punish Madison's politics, but they end up punishing not only Madison's economy, but the economy of the whole state, because the economic growth that we've seen in Wisconsin is really driven by the economic growth of the Madison region.
Yeah, it is. Second largest city in the state, and you guys have a lot going on, and so I do want to talk about that because, you know, I think what Madison is really a lot of cutting edge policies and initiatives, and you know, there's a lot going on, and I think I'd be remiss if we didn't hit on that, and we're going to here in the next segment, because you know, I want to learn about you. You know, the show is broadcast all over the state. Our biggest station is shout out to 92.7 FM, WMDS, Mad Radio, amongst others.
Shout out.
Yes. And so I really want the rest of the state to get to know who you are as well, because, and know what you're doing. I want to talk about your climate initiatives and all of that, because it really is some awesome stuff that's going on in Madison. So we're going to hit that coming up here on the show, and we'll be right back. We got Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway here on The Rational Revolution. They play some good stuff here, don't they? I can't take credit for this, but this is some good music here on The Rational Revolution. We could be a music show. Yeah, what the heck? Why not? Mark Becker here on The Rational Revolution. We're talking with distinguished guest, Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway. Hello again.
Hello again. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
No, this is so cool. And this is a great honor for me. And let's talk Madtown, shall we?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we were talking on the other side of the break about, you know, Madison is really a cutting edge for a lot of things, from, you know, policy to, you know, everything. You have a lot. I know climate is a big, you know, near and dear to your heart, as you said earlier. So like, talk about what's happening in Madison.
So we got a lot going on in Madison. And I think the sort of background is important for people to know.
Yes, please.
Madison's population is growing.
Yes.
Pretty dramatically. And which is great. It's way better than the alternative.
Yes.
And so we're happy to be welcoming new folks to our city. And you know, but what that means is that we have to build more housing. So that's probably the biggest issue in Madison right now, is that we need to build a lot more housing. And the other thing that we're working on is we've got rapid transit, which is going to open. So we're going to have bus rapid transit open this fall, like next month, in Madison, which we've been working on Madison's been talking about it for 30 plus years, but we have been working on it.
What is it? Is bus, like rapid bus transit?
Bus rapid transit. Yep. So this is buses that they are the the long buses with the like accordion in the middle.
Oh, yes.
You know, so they can bend around the corners. And,
oh, cool.
And they're going to be all electric.
Oh, no kidding.
It's very exciting. They're going to be way faster. The ride experience is going to be way faster. So it's easier transit for folks to use to get around our community and to access, you know, employment opportunities, but also education and retail and, you know, all the things that Madison has to offer. So that's a big thing that we're working on. And that's actually, you know, that is like a transportation initiative, but it's also a climate initiative because, again, those buses are going to be all electric.
Yes.
And so by running electric buses, we are reducing our carbon footprint significantly. We're saving money on diesel. We're, you know, the air is not going to be, you know, have those diesel fumes and the particulate matter from it. So we're going to have cleaner, healthier air for everybody in Madison. So there's a dual purpose here. So housing and transit have been a big thing that we're working on. We're also trying really hard to make sure that Madison is reducing our climate pollution footprint and that we are becoming more resilient to climate change, because we have seen, you know, significant climate events in Madison, most notably the 2018 flooding.
Oh, yeah.
But even this year, you know, we had really significant rainstorms that resulted in spot flooding around town, and the lakes are really high. But we've also had heat waves, you know, and we see more storms that are more intense.
Yeah.
And so, you know, climate change is here. It's coming for us, and we have to be ready for it.
Yeah. You know, and as Marjorie Taylor Greene famously said, if you think gas prices are high now, just wait till everyone is forced to drive an electric car. So that's, you know, there's that. So, and one of the things that I thought was interesting, because, you know, being from the great Northeast Wisconsin, I don't get to Madison a ton, and I when I do, I love it, but I didn't realize how hilly it was. And so, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah, I mean, I can see how big climate events, and I know, because I'm a weather nerd too, you know, I've seen the rains getting harder and more robust, and, you know, tornadoes getting bigger and more frequent, and, you know, and so when you have a community that has a lot of hills, flash flooding is a huge issue. And, you know,
I mean, that's definitely been a problem for Madison, but also just the, you know, we get the flash flooding problem, but we also get the, as the lake levels rise, you know, the isthmus in Madison used to be, it used to be wetlands.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so you get really wet soil, and as the lakes come up, the soil gets wet, and people's basements, including mine, gets wet. And, you know, so we have challenges on that as well.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I did, you know, in preparation for this, I researched a little bit about some of the challenges that Madison has and what you're doing, you know, to combat that. And I think what's cool is some of the stuff that you're doing to combat the shortage of housing, because I vacationed this summer in Boston, and they're having some of that same issue where, you know, rent prices are crazy high. Boston's a little different because they're kind of landlocked in a way, but, you know, you're doing a lot of really remarkable stuff in terms of housing. You know, talk about that.
Yeah, so we are working really hard. I mean, like I said, it's a good problem to have, but our population's growing really fast, and we have not kept up in building housing over at least the last decade, probably more than that. So you want to be building enough housing units for the people that are moving into your city at any given time, right? And we just haven't done that for years and years. And so we've been really pushing at a number of fronts. And, you know, I want to be clear, like, we need to build housing of all types, but we also in particular need to build affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we've done is we've almost tripled the amount of funding that we're putting towards affordable housing in Madison. Oh. And we've expanded the types of affordable housing. And so we've been really successful. This is going to get a little housing geeky, sorry. We've been really successful in leveraging the federal tax credits, which come through the state. And what happens is a developer will apply to us for some funding, and then they will go apply to the state for those tax credits, and then they'll be able to build their project. And so we have leveraged millions of dollars in both state tax credits and private money to create affordable housing in Madison. But not everybody, you know, wants to go that route and do the tax credits. Mm-hmm. And so we've also given grants to our land trust and to co-ops to build housing. And we have grants for rehab of existing housing. And we have a program to increase the energy efficiency and indoor air quality of existing housing. So we've got a lot going on that side. The other thing that we've been doing is really scrutinizing the process to get housing of any type built in Madison. And what are the barriers to folks who want to come into Madison? And honestly, it is mostly local folks that are doing housing development in Madison. So there's a handful of housing developers that are building most of the housing in Madison. And so they, you know, they're very familiar with the process. They've gotten good at it, but there are things that we can do to make it easier for them. And so we've made a lot of those changes. So it's things around zoning, it's things around our process and our approvals and what kind of things just need, for example, just a building permit in order to get built and what things might need a little bit higher level of approval, might have to go through a committee, maybe have to go all the way to the Common Council for approval. And so we've tried to really make that easier, tighten it up, and shorten the approval times, shorten the staff review times, while of course still keeping high standards. And
yeah.
To trying to, like, on all parts of the process, make it easier to build housing in Madison.
That's cool. And it really seems like, you know, a lot of things are heading in the right direction. And it really seems like a neat place to be a local government nerd in Madison. We're talking here with Madison Mayor Saatchi Rhodes Conway. We'll see you back on the other side.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and us feeling near as faded as
welcome back. Rational Revolution, Mark Becker, here's your host, and we're honored to be talking today with Madison Mayor Saatchi Rhodes Conway. You know, when I was a local government nerd, a lot of times people in our county board or whatever, we would be talking about an issue like, you know, housing or urban development and all this stuff. And, you know, the more liberal wing of the board would say, well, this is what they're doing in Madison. And, you know, of course you have the old crotchety curmudgeons that would say like, rah, rah, rah. But one of the things that I think is so cool is you guys down there have always had the courage to try stuff. And I've really admired that for a long, long time. It's like, this might not work, but you know what? We can at least talk to our council and our people. We're going to try it, you know? And I've really I've admired that deeply. How do you have that courage to try stuff?
Oh, that's really sweet of you to say. You know, I think one of the things that I really believe deeply in is learning from other places. And that's in part because, you know, what I did before being elected mayor in Madison was I worked with mayors from all around the country. And so I got to see things happening in different cities, and I got to look at policies that other mayors were implementing and how that was going, and really got to learn, you know, what's working, what might work in Madison, what we might try. And I really encourage, you know, other local governments, again, to learn from folks around them and not just in Wisconsin, but across the country. And for me, like, I really believe in innovation. I believe in understanding data and having data inform your decision making, and you know, and looking at problems and asking, like, let's not just say, oh, we've always done it that way, right?
Yeah.
What could we do differently
that,
to make this better? And so I don't know. I mean, what combination of things allows us to do that in Madison? Some of it's political courage, some of it's the kind of folks that get elected to the council, and you know, some of it I think probably has to do with being a university town and having folks that are, you know, like, comfortable with the idea of innovation and trying new things. Now, you know, you always hope you're going to get it right. We don't always get it right. You know, sometimes you try stuff and it doesn't work, and that's that's important. It's important to learn from that and to move on. But I really do feel like, particularly with a community like Madison that is growing and changing, it's important to recognize that you're going to need new policies and that, you know, we are going to have to try some stuff that we haven't done before and to keep up with our growing community.
Yeah, it's the Miss Frizzle method, you know, take chances, make mistakes and get messy. You know, that's kind of what,
right.
And I kind of want to switch gears a little bit because you are down at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, as we talk with Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway. You're in the thick of it right now. And, you know, I was watching the president's speech last night and it was like an emotional walk down memory lane. He talked about, you know, COVID to the economy to, you know, everything that has happened over these last 4 years. He talked about, alluded to like the winter days after a violent mob tried to overthrow the government when he was inaugurated. And he said, you know, summer is here. Democracy has prevailed, but democracy must be preserved. And he talked about being at an inflection point, a rare moment in history where the decision we make now will determine the fate of the United States and the rest of the world. And the big thing where he talked about old ghosts in new garments, talked about the hatred in Charlottesville emboldened by Donald Trump saying that there's both fine people on both sides when on one side there was Nazis and on the other side there was not Nazis. And so, you know, the pessimist in me says like, okay, you know, I do believe now that America will make the right decision, but it's like when we make the right decision, what happens then? Because we're going to have an angry mob, lots of angry mobs, you know, who are fueled by the hatred and the conspiracies of even when he doesn't win, he's going to say he won. What happens then? What do we do?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a very difficult thing, and the division in our country is really, it's disturbing, it's worrisome. I want to be clear, like when I say the division in our country, I don't mean policy disagreement. I don't even mean separate parties. I don't, like, you know, it is not about that. It is about the sort of fundamental, either you believe in democracy and our system and government, or you don't.
Or you
don't. You don't have faith in our elections and you don't have faith in government anymore. And, you know, we see it even in Wisconsin, obviously. And you know, people who, even in Madison, people who are really frustrated, you know, who question government, who don't trust government. And I hate to get all philosophical on you. But
no, please
I feel
do.
Like it is. Well, you know, I feel like coming out of the pandemic, you know, there was this sort of great separation, right? Everybody went back into their homes and hunkered down, and we went through this incredibly scary time. But in a lot of ways, we went through it alone. And I think that we haven't quite recovered from that. Like, yes, we've made progress on the medical front. Yes, there's vaccines. Yes, our economy is coming back. Yes, you know, but I think we haven't sort of reconnected with civil society. And something got broke in the pandemic and we haven't fixed it yet. And I don't want to blame just the pandemic because honestly, Donald Trump was working on breaking it.
Yes, every day. Yep.
And he contributed deeply to this disconnect from civil society and this mistrust. And I think part of our work, and you heard that in the president's speech, right? And I think you will hear it again and again from the stage here at the convention. And, you know, actually the person who spoke most eloquently to it was Reverend Senator Warnock.
Oh my God, he's brilliant. Yeah, he's amazing.
He is brilliant. His speech was amazing. He talked about healing, you know, and he talked about what we need to do as a country to heal. And I think that is really the fundamental job. It is a long-term job, right? It is years. But that is the fundamental work that we need to engage in, is to heal, as the president says, to heal the soul of the nation.
Yeah. And it's,
you know, to preserve that and to reconnect with each other and to bring people back into our democracy, back into understanding government. And I think local government is a way to do that, honestly, because it's the place that is closest to folks' daily lives.
Well, and, you know, to me, the pandemic, when we went into our little, our foxholes, some people got back out and some people kept digging. And when they kept digging, it's like the once untouchables that we had in our society, the faith that we had in our doctors and in medicine and in the integrity of our elections, you know, like all of those things came under question. You know, people talk the late night ballot dumps. Well, okay, I was involved in elections and I knew that in Green Bay, that's how it works. We don't count the absentee ballots until it's all done. It's not a conspiracy. That's how it works. And if people would get involved in those, they would see that. You're exactly right. And so it's, how do we dig ourselves and how do we dig our neighbors out of these foxholes that they're living in? I don't know how that's done, but I hope beyond hope that it's something that we can get done, because I mean, we have to get there, don't we? So I guess, you know, we got a couple minutes left here. I want to talk about, you know, how we get out of this, but then I also want to end on a positive note too. You know, one of the things that we had former Congressman Reid Ribble on the show, and he kind of thought that the demise of the GOP would crumble when Donald Trump was convicted of a felony. And unfortunately, that just emboldened, you know, the base. And we had, you know, as President Biden said last night, we have a president, or a guy running for president, who's the nominee of a major political party, who said that America is a failing nation. Do you think America is a failing nation?
I don't. I think America is a beautiful, diverse, complicated, complex, incredible nation that is on a lot of fronts doing great stuff, and on a few fronts, like, we could use some work. But failing, no. No. America is a grand experiment, and it is a great democracy, and we've got a lot of work to do together. But I have a lot of confidence in our ability to do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, and you know something about being a trailblazing woman yourself, you know, as the first LGBT woman to be the mayor of Madison. So that's, I don't know if I can say this, but that's pretty badass. So, you know, that's cool. I think we're on the precipice of doing something else that's, you know, electing another trailblazing woman. And I, you know, it's funny, Gerald Ford said to a group of kids way back in the day, he's like, yeah, there's going to be, and he said, there should be a woman president, but the problem is for men, there's not going to be a lot of men presidents anymore after that, because the woman's going to do such a good job that you know, it's going to make men look pretty foolish. So what inspires you about about the path that we're on?
You know, I President Biden is probably the most productive and effective president of my lifetime. Yeah. And watching he and Vice President Harris work and get things done over the past, you know, 3+ years has been incredible. And they have done so many good things for cities across the country, and I'm in awe of how amazing this administration has been. And then to see the folks, so obviously the top of the ticket, the president, the vice president, and now Governor Walz, are amazing folks and they're inspiring. But for me, it's like looking at who the cabinet secretaries are,
yes,
and looking at who their assistant secretaries are, and looking at the people in the administration who are doing the work every day, these are really smart, dedicated, caring, compassionate people. And that gives me a lot of hope, because I think we know how to get government right. I think we know how to get the right people into government to do good work for the people of America.
Yes, and we got to get Tammy reelected, right?
Yes,
she's
we do.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yes, she was on the show a few weeks ago. She was in studio. She was just brilliant. And that was the first time I met Tammy Baldwin, and oh my God, was I blown away.
She is an incredibly smart woman. She works so hard for the state of Wisconsin, and yes, we're going to reelect her in November. We got to pay attention to assembly and Senate races at
yes.
the state level. Obviously, we got to pay attention to the congressional races as well. And, you know, we have a lot of work to do going into November, but you know what? Being here with the Wisconsin delegation, we are fired up. We're ready to go.
Yeah. And, you know, and back with Tammy Baldwin, like one of the, what I got from her was, my God, does she care? Oh my God, does she care about the
yeah.
state, about the people she represents, you know, and
that's right.
Yeah, she goes to D.C. not by herself. She goes with the hopes and the dreams and the aspirations of every Wisconsin citizen, and it shows. Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway, thank you for hanging out with us. I really hope you're not a stranger to the show, because you are brilliant. I'm really proud that you were here. Seriously, thank you so much.
You are so welcome. It has been a pleasure. It's great to talk to you. I'm happy to come back anytime.
Yes. Write that down. We've got a new friend to the Rational Revolution. So, yeah, thank you so much. This is going to be a really exciting time here leading up to November. And I'm glad to be on the team with you and keep doing wonderful things down in Madison.
Thank you.
You got it. We'll see you back here on the Rational Revolution right after this. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Oh my God, wasn't she great? I've never spoken with her before, Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from Madison. That was really cool. And so thank you so much to her and to the DNC and the Democratic Mayors Association for putting that together. They did that, and it was really, that was cool. I hope to talk to her again soon. I hope you guys, tell me what you think. Comment and engage with us on all of our socials. But that was neat. So again, many thanks to her. And so this last segment is kind of like Mark's musings. And so I apologize that this subject is going to be what it is, but we're going to switch gears a little bit. And sometimes some of my musings are doom and gloom and dark, but I try not to, but I have to talk about something. So on Monday, my wife put our kids down for a nap, and we live across the street from their school, and the school has been undergoing this multi-million-dollar renovation throughout the summer. It's been really cool to see. It's like the school is like blossoming like a flower. It was a one-story little, you know, school thing, and now it's got this big glass entryway, and it's modern, and it's got a different playground for the 4K. It's so cool what they're doing. And but on Monday, my wife put the kids down for a nap, including the 7-year-old who is currently in the other room listening to Dad meander and all that. But they put him down. She put him down for a nap. And as she was coming down, and he's going to be a first grader next week, she was coming down the stairs, and she started to hear the school's alarm going off, and it was just blaring. You know, there's no one there now. It's empty. But it was the alarm that the school would be sounding if there was an intruder or, you know, God forbid, the unthinkable was happening. I can't even bring myself to say it. And she sent me a video of the alarm, you know, and it could be so clearly heard across the street, even through shut doors and windows. And there was, you know, the principal was on the loudspeaker recording saying this is a code red and all. It's just graphic. And when I came home, we kind of talked about that, and she reflected on the other drills that the school students have. And, you know that there's a tornado drill, and during that it's bright blue skies and the tornado drill happens and you know they're fine. And then once a month they're required to do a fire drill, and this kids come out and they, you know, they're laughing and, you know, the teachers are herding their cats and you know that they're okay. But when this drill happens, the kids don't come outside, and you know, you don't know what's going on. You can kind of just breathe and try to shut that, you know, that little gnat in your ear up that's telling you that something is wrong. And you just hope that in a few hours you can walk across the street, pick up your kid and give him a hug and, you know, and hold their hand as they come home because they're okay. And so last year I asked my son, who was six, you know, what happened during that drill? And keep in mind, you know, like when I did the drill, it was shortly after Columbine when I was in high school. And so it was like, this is not going to happen. All we do is shut the lights off. And the teacher is like, shut up. And you just be quiet until the all clear comes. And like, you know, the code word for this is like the principal coming on the loudspeaker saying, would Mr. Locker please come to the office? And it's like, oh God, Mr. Locker, you know? And so it's like, it was not anything that was really, you know, it wasn't going to happen. And my, how that has changed. And my son was telling me, oh, well, what they had to do was, they were supposed to, and they, being a classroom full of 6 and 7 year old children, they were tasked to grab something that they could throw at someone. And they were supposed to huddle in the corner of the room, and God forbid, if the angel of death opened that door, they had to throw what was ever in their hand at them. If a man was hell-bent on delivering the unthinkable, these 23 6 and 7 year olds had the impossible task of fending off the devil himself. We as a society cannot get our act together dealing with guns and the great debate that we have in our society and in our country. We can't bring ourselves to find it within us to do the right thing. And so what we have done is we have passed that responsibility of protecting our children, and we have placed that responsibility directly on the shoulders of the children themselves. Grab a stapler, grab your binder, because if that person comes in, we have to throw it at them. Guys, come on. And then we have GOP officials who say with a straight face that the only way to solve this problem of guns in our school is to put more guns in the school. What? Give that little Fran lady who's sitting at the front desk a rifle, a pistol, whatever. Really? That's what we're saying. The answer is to give our teachers and administrators and hall monitors more weapons, because that's going to solve it. You know, like, adolescence is a confusing and a treacherous journey filled with judgment and chaos and trying to figure out who you are and who you want to be and what you want to be. And schools, like homes, should be sanctuaries where they can, as Miss Frizzle said, take chances, make mistakes, get messy, where they can figure out life and come into their own. It shouldn't be a target for evil. As our kids are going back to school, think about that. How we have to protect the most precious asset that we have and keep them safe and keep them thriving. That's what I got this week. We have to make sure that no one, nothing, no evil act can extinguish the flame that they have. So think about that as we go into November. That's important. And thank you all once again for hanging out with us on this lovely episode of The Rational Revolution. I am Mark Becker. Thank you so much for Mayor Sadia Rhodes Conway for her time. And thank you all, as always, for hanging out with us on The Rational Revolution. We'll see you next week.